following is a previously broadcast program.
Thank you. Well, welcome back to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is All Things McGill. I'm Rose.
I'm Maya.
And today we are interviewing a lot of different people from different groups on campus. So firstly, the Students in Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights at McGill, Students for a Free Tibet, and the Indigenous Student Alliance. So we're so excited to have everyone here. So hello everyone.
Hello.
So if you just want to each tell us a bit about yourself, the student group with which you're associated, and your main role within the group, we would love to hear. So anyone who just wants to kick it off, go ahead.
I can. Hi, my name is Katie. I am a citizen of the Chickasaw Nation of Oklahoma, but I grew up on Miami territory in Indiana. I am a general member of the ISA, but I have been involved in various capacities for my whole university career. I've been the co-chair in the past, as well as the VP Communications and the VP Events. Yeah, that's just a bit about me, a bit about the ISA. The ISA is a community organization that's based on, you know, providing support as well as lobbying for Indigenous students to McGill.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here.
Sure. Yeah. My name is Andreas. I go by he, him. I'm a former coordinator for Students in Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights at McGill. I used to study political science until I graduated last year. So SPHR is a non-hierarchical student organization that advocates to uphold the rights of the Palestinian people in the face of settler colonialism, apartheid, genocide, and all forms of racism, discrimination, misinformation, and misrepresentation. I was quite active over the past like 2 to 3 years, and I've still kind of stayed somewhat involved with SPHR even after graduation.
Amazing. Thank you. Okay, Rebecca?
Hi, everyone. My name is Rebecca. My pronouns are she, her, and I am the VP External for Students for Free Tibet, McGill. SFT is a international grassroots organization that works in solidarity with Tibetans inside Tibet in their pursuits of basic freedoms and human rights. I'm glad to be here today.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much. So another question we have for you is that your three groups work together a lot. And so how did this common relationship and solidarity arise between your three groups? And what is in common that you view between your three groups that made the solidarity coalition necessary? And can you explain the solidarity coalition to our listeners, please?
I could perhaps explain like the coalition, and then perhaps Katie and Rebecca, you can kind of explain, you can kind of add on if you like. So basically the Divest for Human Rights Coalition is a coalition of seven organizations which came together at the beginning of 2021 to present basically a list of companies complicit in a number of human rights abuses, settler colonial violence, genocide, both in Turtle Island and in other places around the globe. So basically, the kind of the human rights abuses that are mentioned on this list, which was turned into a policy. Are related to kind of the different causes that each of our groups are involved in. So the seven members of the coalition are SPHR, ISA, SFT. There's also Students for Peace and Disarmament. McGill stands with Hong Kong, and one more, I believe, or is that all of them?
CJAM.
Climate Justice Action McGill and Divest McGill. So we've been basically pushing for a Divest for Human Rights policy to be passed through SMU. It was passed at a General Assembly in February, then it was passed by the SMU Legislative Council a week later. And now we're still waiting for ratification by the SMU Board of Directors, which is the kind of supreme power in the student union, and which for all kinds of reasons has been trying to delay the implementation of the policy.
But even before the coalition existed, our groups have kind of been involved with each other. There's quite a deal of overlap in our membership. We have hosted events, we've hosted workshops. Last year we hosted a greenwashing workshop where we kind of discussed the ways that this specific type of colonialism, which kind of acts by using environmentalism to justify colonialism, is present all over the globe, and the way that these processes have kind of are imported between, you know, Palestine, Tibet, and Turtle Island.
Yeah, and I think you asked a little bit about what kind of we see as our common goals and why we formed a coalition. And I really think that that just comes down to advocating for the complete abolition of colonial legacies and of the colonial present in various countries, places, occupied nations. I mean, we see this in Tibet, on Turtle Island, in Palestine, and I think that's really the point that we come together on, is advocating for a cessation to colonial violence and the kind of new rebuilding of communities of care and solidarity, you know, within our own community at McGill. So I
know that a lot of what you folks do is like organizing events and basically bringing together this community of just, because you said that there were like a lot of the membership was widespread across the different groups. The same people are group members in all these different groups. So how did how was organizing campus activism change during a pandemic? Like, what challenges did you run into? And if you could just tell us a little bit about that, and how did the nature of your events change too?
I think, you know, like with everything else, we've kind of had to make a shift to virtual activism. So for the ISA, that meant participating in the Take James Down campaign in collaboration with the Black Students Network, which, you know, we had to do entirely virtually through, you know, a documentary and like a letter writing campaign instead of, you know, what we would typically do, which is organize a protest on campus.
Yeah, so I could say that for SPHR as well, like obviously there was a transition to online activism and online events that had to be made. During the Divest for Human Rights campaign, that was obviously also, I mean, all the mobilizing had to be done online. And we actually came to realize that, you know, mobilizing hundreds of people to attend an online GA might be easy in the sense that, you know, people can just get on a Zoom link and be at the General Assembly, but it's also very difficult to actually raise awareness about what anything kind of campus related, because you know, you can't just casually, like, you know, pick up a whole bunch of people on your way to a physical GA the way that, you know, all GAs used to happen. SPHR specifically has also been in the month of May, when ethnic cleansing in the Jerusalem neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah really got a lot of international coverage, and when the May uprising began in throughout Palestine, that was when SPHR actually did organize organize one or two protests on campus, and also collaborated very closely with off campus Palestine activism groups, for instance, to participate in like mass demonstrations in front of the Israeli consulate in Montreal and in other places around Montreal.
And I was basically just going to jump in with a lot of similar things. SFT, of course, had to transition into kind of the world of virtual organizing, and I think a huge barrier for our group right now is just, everyone is so, you know, there's this huge possibility with, oh my gosh, you know, I can go to events all around the world. But there's also, you know, people get exhausted. And so I think a huge you know, barrier in the past year with the pandemic has just been attendance and the inability to really create a strong online community. So I think really what we're going to be focused on next year is community building. We had some fantastic events before the pandemic. We had a Momo night, and Momos are Tibetan dumplings, and we had a PhD candidate at McGill who is Tibetan come in and teach everyone to make momos, and he used to be a monk. He's really good at making momos really quickly. I think we're just hoping to continue to start to rebuild that community as we can do, you know, more hybrid or even in-person events in the next year.
Yeah, I've definitely seen during the pandemic that even though there's a surplus of events that you can do online now, which are really wonderful and great, it's hard to like foster that sense of community when it's not something like physical. And because the pandemic was so isolating, I can see why it's really important for a community build up in these next few months, because there's definitely hope on the horizon, especially in Montreal. Yeah. For maybe more physical and communal grassroots experiences. So the next question is along the same lines as what Rebecca was saying, is can you tell us any upcoming events or campaigns that you have coming up in the next year, in the next month, online or in person,
whatever. Or even just like ideas that are in the works, because obviously it's hard to plan since everything is so
up in the air.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But any ideas that your groups have been thinking about, we would love to hear about, and I'm sure our audience is just as curious.
Yeah, so we definitely have kind of been itching to host another collaborative workshop since, you know, we planned the first one, which was in March of 2020. So obviously that didn't ever amount to much. But that's definitely something that I think we've been looking to do alongside the Divest Coalition, to kind of, beyond just lobbying for policies and writing policies, to kind of do some more educational events as well.
Yeah, and so in terms of SPHR, I mean, I think SPHR would also, you know, be interested to kind of, participate in you know, in another kind of joint workshop about greenwashing, environmental colonialism. More specifically, I think for the end of summer, SPHR might be doing some more work related to raising awareness about surveillance, doxing, and blacklisting on campus. Both because of the recent revelations about a potential blacklist at McGill, and also due to kind of a longer history of this kind of surveillance and canary mission at McGill and on other North American campuses. In terms of the Divest for Human Rights Coalition, we've also been considering the idea of perhaps a kind of mass joint action or demonstration sometime at the beginning of fall semester, which would be a great opportunity for all the groups to kind of, you know, publicly show their solidarity with each other, make demands related to divestment to the McGill administration, and potentially also to kind of, you know, recruit new members, perhaps.
Really quickly, what is the significance of this blacklist? And
can you just talk more about it, so that way if our listeners don't know about it specifically, I've seen things and I've read about it from links on social media and Instagram, but I would love to hear what you have to say about it specifically, if
that's okay.
Sure. So from what I know from the SPHR members who've been working on this, essentially, SPHR basically learned about the fact that that there was a student who had learned that their name, that basically their name had been placed on this on a list, and that which a list that was specifically to kind of monitor and kind of keep track of pro-Palestine activists at McGill. And when they actually tried to alert the administration about this, you know, within a day or within 2 days, basically they were doxxed. So their private information was posted online in a kind of really racist, you know, like a strange, like racist fake post. It also, according to a number of testimonies, also, there's basically a number of figures in the student government, high positions of the student government, so on the board of directors or on the legislative council, who may have known about or made use of this list. So there's still like a lot that most of us don't know. I mean, I mostly know what's been published so far. So there's the SPHR Medium article, which is so far the only kind of published information about this. But so far, the SMU has actually launched an investigation. And hopefully, you know, the McGill administration will also be, you know, launching its own investigation. So SPHR has been pushing people to try and pressure McGill to do so.
Thanks for that.
Answers it.
Yeah, no, thanks for that explanation. At first, I have like a lot of questions about it. Like, how does one get on the blacklist? How do they, you know, surveil everything like that? It's terrifying that that would be happening, and our people our own age would know about it and be like propagating it. And so, yeah, I'm glad it's come to light and that we can figure out what the root of this is.
Back to Rebecca, upcoming events. Thank you, Andres.
I think it's also important to note that lists like this exist, you know, in the institution of McGill, but also outside. I mean, if you're organizing for Tibet, if you're organizing for East Turkestan, what's colonially known as Xinjiang, in solidarity with Uyghurs, you're going to be on a list. You know, you're going to be on a list that the Chinese consulate has made. You know, that you're going to be on a list, and it's going to be hard to enter, you know, so-called China. So I think it's really important. There was a case in Toronto where a Tibetan was elected, Chimi Lamo was elected to be the president of one of the student unions on a U of T campus, and was subject to a brutal online harassment campaign. So I think it's really important to note that this is present, and this is an exceptionally alarming issue across these communities. But anyway, I digress. In terms of SFT, I think that that Katie really got at it. We want to continue raising awareness. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding. There's a lot of different reasons that people come into movements against colonialism in China, and so I think we really want to be creating spaces where we can have those in-depth conversations in terms of environmentalism and as it intersects with human rights, as it intersects with colonialism. There is a huge issue in Tibet right now where nomadic pastoralists are being resettled, forcibly resettled from their traditional homelands on the grasslands, and being forced to move into tiny restrictive communities and completely give up their traditional life ways. So I think that's an issue that we delved into in an event last summer in a conversation on a short story written by an incredible Tibetan author. That's another issue we want to delve into in conversations and events in the next year, and really just get people engaged on more than a superficial level with Tibetan and other anti-colonial issues.
I wanted to share a brief story that one of our Tibetan members asked me to share on the show, and I think it ties in really well to the themes we talked about, doxing, surveillance, the reach of the Chinese consulate, and Chinese media on campus, and the way that it predominantly affects racialized people. So this member was tabling at the McGill Activities Night, at the SMU Activities Night, and at the end of the night, a Chinese student, came up to her, and it was clear that she had been waiting for that opportunity to confront this member about the about her thoughts, and so she started yelling at her that the Dalai Lama, the highest spiritual leader in Tibet, was a liar and a murderer, and that he had slaves, and that she shouldn't be advocating for Tibet and for the freedom and human rights of her people. And my friend at Students for a Free Tibet said it was really upsetting because she would have thought in an academic institution and in Canada, you know, this type of propaganda wouldn't have that reach, but it did, and it affected her. So she wanted me to share this because it's really important for people to know what's going on our own campus and the extent to which the brainwashing travels.
Awesome.
Just to jump back to the blacklist, I think it's also important to note that it specifically targets BIPOC people, right? Like solidarity between Palestinian and Indigenous and other marginalized groups is so strong, and to make a blacklist targeting specifically pro-Palestine students is just inherently going to target marginalized and racialized students at McGill, which I guess wasn't addressed, but I think that's super important to note that it's a racist action as well as a colonial action.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Thank you so much for everything you had to say about that. And I think our audience will be especially interested in what you had to say about the blacklist and its colonial racialized ties. So thank you for that. And if there's anything that you suggest for any listeners or viewers who are interested in getting involved with your groups, like where should they go to get involved? Is there any advice you have to offer? Any person they should email? Because I know for myself, I'd be really interested in joining these groups. So if you could maybe provide those resources for our audience, that would be amazing.
Yeah, definitely. So the ISA is on social media. We have an Instagram account as well as a Facebook page. And you can just shoot the Facebook page a message about, attending meetings. We have weekly meetings typically. So send a message and you'll be added to all of our groups.
Yeah, so for SPHR, it's kind of the same. We have SPHR has a Facebook and Instagram account. I think the best way to reach SPHR would be with a message to the SPHR Facebook page about getting involved.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing with SFT McGill. We're on Facebook at McGill Students for Free Tibet, and we're on Instagram at SFT McGill. Shoot our Facebook page a message. Like Students for Free Tibet Canada, because they post actively if you want to learn more about the issue. And yeah, hope to see your listeners in the next year.
Yeah, definitely. And thank you so much for talking to us today. And just so you know, our radio show, we'll be here for the next year having this radio show. So anytime your group needs to get something out, especially when events start being a little bit more regular in person, definitely reach out, and we will be more than happy to have you on the show, or you could just take over the show for however many times or whatever, because it's honestly, it's here for groups like y'all's to have as a resource. Exactly. So yeah, but we just really wanted to say thank you for being here.
Working steady, but I never called it art. I got my shit together, meeting Christ and reading Marx. It failed my little fire, but it spread the dying spark. Go tell the young Messiah. What happens to the heart? Where I tried to double park. The rivalry was vicious. The women were in charge. It was nothing, it was business. But it left an ugly mark. I've come here to revisit. What happens to the heart? Had a pussy in the kitchen and a panther in the yard. In the prison of the gifted, I was friendly with the guards, so I never had to witness what happens to the heart. Just to look at her was trouble. It was trouble from the start. Sure, we played a stunning couple, but I never liked the part. It ain't pretty, it ain't subtle. What happens to the heart? Now the angel's got a fiddle, the devil's got a harp. Every soul is like a minnow, every mind is like a shark. May I've broken every window, but the house is dark. I care but very little. What happens to the heart? Then I studied with this beggar. He was filthy, he was scarred by the claws of many women he had failed to disregard. No fable, hear no lesson, no singing meadowlark, just a filthy beggar guessing. What happens to the heart? Working steady, but I never called it art. It was just some old convention, like the horse before the cart. I had no trouble betting on the flood against the art. You see, I knew about the ending. What happens to the heart?
It was Coney Island. They called Coney Island the playground of the world. There was no place like it in the whole world like Coney Island when I was a youngster. No place in the world like it. It was so fabulous. Now it shrunk down to almost nothing, you see? And I still remember in my mind how things used to be. And I feel very bad. But people from all over the world came here. From all over the world. It was a playground, they call it the playground of the world over here. When I was very small, I even got lost in Coney Island, but they found me on the beach. And we used to sleep on the beach here. Sleep overnight. They don't do it anymore. Things changed, see. They don't sleep anymore on the beach.